I wish they'd hurry up with that transmission. I want to go to bed.
I suggest that you reach deep down inside yourself there and try and find something that'll keep you awake just a little while longer, because this transmission coming up may just rekindle your will to live.
Executive Order AUC-3423.
Listen to this, boys.
Thank you. feels like times have changed, 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 changed.
Somebody had a dream again, huh? You don't think that it's time that somebody cared enough to have a dream?
I'd love to ask you. First of all, I want to thank you because my uncle is one of the Tuskegee Airmen and he's here tonight.
Right.
You went out of your way to have a black writer, a black composer, a black director, even brought in a black producer. What made you do what no other Hollywood producer has done in terms of making sure that we're involved in telling our own story?
Well, ultimately it's a black story. And I wanted it to be infused with that, that feeling and that ethos of, you know, what it's like and to tell the story. I'm not sure it's a story that a white person can tell.
And what struck you about this story that made you want to tell this story?
Well, it's inspirational. It's about a bunch of young kids that overcome lots of obstacles and risk their lives to make America safe, you know, for democracy and at the same time, you know, basically a patriotic movie about our country and people who actually helped make it what it is today.
True. And did you learn anything about yourself in the process of getting this film made?
No, probably only that I'm crazy.
So tell me about your role in the film in terms of effects. What did you do exactly?
I was the overall visual effects supervisor. So I was the point person for George and for Anthony. And I pretty much supervised all the work that gets done, which is quite a bit for this film.
I was going to say, from what I heard from, I spoke to Rick McCallum yesterday, and he was telling me you only had a few planes, and you only had them for a couple of days.
Yeah.
So tell me about having to recreate, replicate, and make it look like there are lots of planes all the time.
Yeah, I mean, that was a huge challenge, because they really did. They brought in a few real planes, and then they built some mock-up planes, but they didn't move, of course. You know, so it was pretty much up to us, and of course, all the dogfights, you know, it's half the movie is in the air. And, you know, the real challenge was bringing together the amount, you know. So putting on screen just how many bombers, how many fighters were in the air for these missions.
And how much creating effects like that for something, most human beings have never seen unless they were there.
Yeah.
But they've seen it in the movies.
Right.
But they've never seen it this realistic.
Right.
So how do you balance like what will seem almost too realistic, too slick, versus what people are used to seeing and expecting in a movie like this?
Yeah, I mean, it's It's a challenge, but it's we constantly go back to reference. You know, I mean, World War II is heavily documented. You know, by the Army, by the Air Force. There's YouTube footage of just about everything. You know, so it is a challenge though to keep it grounded in that and not go toward the the video game culture of everything moving too fast. You know, the action happening, in a kind of contrived way, to keep it. But since it's such a monumental, historical, story, there's that extra emphasis on keeping it real.
Okay, and now, to me, and most effects, it's the devil's in the details. So, it's not the explosion, but the little pieces that hit things and the little reflection of the flame. And so how much of that versus the idea of the effect and the main setup did it take to really get it to look real?
Oh, it's all about the details. It is. And that's actually one of the great things about a period piece like this is there's such, with these machines, there's so much kind of dirty detail that you can get into it, and even just the idea of the bullets firing, there's details in it that you put smoke in, you put shell casings, you put a little fire. Yeah. It's so much richer than, if you're working on a space movie where they fire lasers, for example. You don't have as much texture to put into it.
You don't have as much believability you have to bring to it.
Right.
All right, you're tuned to...
Is that right now? Are we on the air?
The feeling you're going to have. It is invisible. Thank you.
talking about it, and I have no idea. I have no idea. I have no idea why I'm here. I don't know what I'm doing, you know, talking about this. I saw something, they saw something. There was a lot of light. That's all I know. I have no idea. I have no idea why I'm here. I don't know what I'm doing, you know, talking about this. I saw something, they saw something. There was a lot of light. That's all I
know. Now, where are my people? The 70 billion people of Earth, where are they hiding?
Fascinating.
How long has it been since you've slept?
I don't know. Funny. I never seem to get tired. But I know I haven't slept since this thing began.
Feels like times have changed.
Manchmal habe ich keine Vorstellung von unserer Zukunft. Es ist wie Umrisse von Hügeln und Bäumen hinter einem Regenschleier. Es ist wie Umrisse von Hügeln und Bäumen hinter einem Regenschleier.
Supposed to have a co-host here in the studio. Who's supposed to be here early.
Yeah.
But they're not.
What does that mean? You got me.
That's a very good question. What does that mean?
What does that mean?
What does it mean?
You got me.
What does it say? Well, now, we heard George Lucas and then we heard the effects guy for Red Tails. And I'm going to play to you two other interviews this morning. This evening, or depending on how you look at it. And George Lucas spent $93 million pursuing this dream, this passion, this thing he was passionate about. Ed Burns spent $9,000 making a movie. That's probably the best thing I've ever seen him do. And Vincent D'Onofrio spent $100,000 of his own money to make a film, a slasher horror musical. So, here's the question, Chris.
And I spent, go ahead, $150,000 making my movie. Go ahead.
You see, when you hear them talk, Chris, it will be like a light shining in darkness. That's all I got to say to you. That's all I got to say.
I'm totally, you know, I could make a film about, you know,
making a film. I understand.
And we would all sit there and we would all be on the same page, whether it's George Lucas's money, whether it... By the way, congratulations. That was a great, you know, thing with George Lucas. How exciting.
Yes, it was great to actually meet George Lucas and talk to him for a few minutes. And
got
take a picture
with him.
Of course.
And now
George, you changed my life.
You guys are boys, and he and you and everything, and he's like,
yes.
Yeah, man, let's hang out. Next thing you know, you were out there hanging with George.
I call him G now.
Yeah.
All right. So, But here's the thing. Each of these artists, these filmmakers, are doing things they're passionate about. And then they come up with their own method of doing it. You know, George came up with his own method. You know, we'll discuss that. And I'm also going to talk to you about some films that are out now. Do you see anything, Chris? Do you go to any movies?
You know, I pretty much just watch Star Trek.
I've got that feeling. I started to watch Star Trek, the motion picture, over the weekend, and I thought of you.
Yeah, I've probably seen that at least 50 times. I've watched, you know, recently I just watched Wrath of Khan twice over the weekend. I've lost my mind. Because, you know, this, I just want to, I know we have to do a theme, but this is what I thought of, okay? And I thought that we would put it out there because Night Shift, as we're always innovating and changing the way things are, that they could do one more Star Trek movie with Nimoy and Shatner, and it starts out and it's Bones has died and it's his funeral. Okay? What do you think about that? And because they're both 80, and they could, you know, and we know Shatner's going to die down in the future, so they could do references to, like, you know, he doesn't know these things are coming and stuff. And Scotty went and disappeared. Remember, he went into that episode where he just is in that loop for 80 years. But you could have Uhura, you know, and you could have Chekhov, and you could bring them back, and George Takei. So what do you think about that, Mike? What do you think? Some kind of something based on them, they, you know, the Bones' funeral, and it turns into something. Who knows? Something. So I'm putting it out there. I think the film would be successful. I think it would be great, Shatner. It would be great. I'd like to see them do one more. What do you think of that? That's crazy, right?
Fascinating.
So I'm putting it out there, man. One more film with Shatner and Nimoy, and it's Bones' funeral. We never resolve that.
They're just sitting by the lake.
Just something that Bones has died, you know, and then, you know, I don't know, you know, and have what's his name directed? The guy from,
this is just like your face. You need to get rich and just make this happen. And it'll be a stage.
You know, Wrath of Khan, who did it? Nicholas Meyer.
No, I think it'll be better.
Write the script.
It's a stage play. It'll be Kirk and Spock.
So
my question to you is, what are you passionate about, Chris?
What am I passionate about?
What are you truly passionate about at this point in your life? What are you passionate about?
Actually, what I'm thinking I probably will do is, something. This works.
You may what?
I will probably do something. What it is, I don't know.
You're passionate that you will one day do something. I understand.
Yeah, passionate. I really love making films. And,
yeah, there's the great Chris Taylor there. Chris Taylor, I want to ask you something.
Yeah.
Does the name Murray Goldfinger ring a bell?
Murray Goldfinger?
That was Goldfinger's younger brother.
That was Goldfinger's son. You know, Murray Goldfinger.
All right, anyway, Chris, and everybody listening, you're tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI 99.5 FM. And I want to thank those who pledged last week for Martin Luther King Day. We have a number of people who did and got the Martin Luther King mix. I appreciate that. I really do. And the phone number, and not that we're necessarily going to take a lot of calls yet, because we have some interviews to get through and some subjects and stories and things, but the phone number here, do you remember the phone number, Chris?
Yeah, we'll get to that, man. Where are they going? So what are you passionate about?
I don't get to talk till towards the last third.
So we're going to talk about what you're passionate about.
Yeah, I'll talk about what I'm passionate about. Yes, I will. But I want to hear what people have to say. 212-209-2900. I'll just tease
you. Who was supposed to come? Who was supposed to co-host tonight? Byron?
No, Elena was supposed to be. No, Byron's next week. Elena was supposed to be here.
Oh, Elena will be
all her glory. She said, I'll be there at 11:30.
She'll be showing up. Elena will roll on in.
I got here at like 11:35.
She's hanging. She's on the road, you know.
Elena.
She's, Can I just, you know, you always get me going with the headlines, but can I tell you, like, this story that's the most bizarre thing involved in New York City? Can I just tell you this?
You have a life is like science fiction story.
Let me just say this to you, and I'll let you figure it out, okay? You ready? Here we go. New York City police throw Navy SEAL into psych ward for claiming he's a SEAL. A Virginia man claimed to be a Navy SEAL to talk his way out of a gun possession arrest on Thursday. The New York Police Department committed him to the psych ward, thinking his claims of elite military status were the rantings of a lunatic. Turns out the guy was in fact an elite Navy SEAL. But as the New York Post, telling the New York, the New York Police Department, "I'm an elite military unit, you can't arrest me," doesn't help much. The 39-year-old Sean Day was on leave from his duty as a Navy SEAL when cops nailed him for running a red light in Manhattan. They searched his truck. They found a 9mm semi-automatic pistol and 3 magazines full of ammo. During the arrest, police claimed Day was babbling incoherently and repeatedly claimed that he was an elite Navy SEAL with top secret clearance, but was unable to provide any documentation. After getting shipped off to Bellevue, where he was undergoing psychiatric evaluation. Right? You still with me?
I'm with you.
Okay. The, where does the rest of it go? Right down to the end here. Basically, the police department, he was released into the care of the Navy that showed up, and he was an actual Navy SEAL. And they've now done the weapons possession and the traffic violation have been deferred. Now that is bizarre, don't you think? Or is it just me?
It's bizarre. It's bizarre.
You're driving along, you get pulled over, you tell them that you're a Navy SEAL. They find a semi-automatic 9mm pistol in New York City.
So was he actually a Navy SEAL?
Or yes.
He really was.
Yes, he was actually a Navy SEAL. The Navy. Yes, he was. Everything he was saying was true. It's just one of those things that we're never going to hear anything about it ever again. It's just going to be one of those things. You know, you could watch Terminator. you know what I'm saying?
How do you relate that to Terminator?
Because I watch Terminator, and it's this premise where somebody shows up, it's the same idea that it's like. Don't know whether
they're tie this together, Chris. You're gonna seem like you're out of your mind.
look.
Yeah.
The thing with Terminator is, you really don't. You tell some guy that this guy's from the future, and you start telling everybody, and they think you're crazy. You see what I mean? And then it turns out that there actually are Terminators, and they were sent back from the future, and that the end of the world does happen.
Okay. Okay. So
you follow what I'm saying?
Okay.
So in other words,
like in Star Trek IV. Where from the future he came to get the whales.
Well, Star Trek IV, was a political statement,
Yeah, but nobody believed her, that he came in a spaceship and stuff,
No one really.
It works. I mean, I'm tying it all back into Star Trek for you.
Well, you should, because Star Trek is, what my life revolved around at this point.
I noticed that.
I mean, that's,
Yeah. All right, well, I am going to play some of the Ed Burns. Now, Ed Burns made a new film. I don't know if you know. He made a film called Newlyweds. Did you know this?
No.
And it's interesting. Ed Burns has this career where he makes, these weird little films on his own. And then he makes these Hollywood films. And I never really thought of Ed Burns as any big, anything to me. But he's been in Saving Private Ryan, he's been in these big films. He did a film with De Niro. He's been given a lot of chances. And he starred with a lot of major stars. He's been in a lot of major Hollywood stuff. And I really had only seen a few of his films, and I was just not that impressed. But then I saw Newlyweds, Chris, and I gotta tell you, it completely works. Then I went on to find out that he only spent $9,000 on the film. And he talks about that. But what you're going to really be struck by how his desire to create, his desire to tell a story, even in an unconventional way, became, or even filming it, making it in an unconventional way, became a new way of making film. So it's very interesting. That's why I think you would enjoy it. Are you with me, Chris?
Yes, I'm totally here.
All right, and so this is not, this film is currently, it played for a week or two, and I know it's going to be video on demand, and it's interesting because it also touches upon the fact that there are all new ways of distributing films, and that's a whole thing. I'll talk about, films that are coming out, The Gray, which is great. and Haywire, which I really liked.
What's going on? Because Spike Lee, they just had a whole thing that he just went off in Sundance. Mm-hmm. They asked him a question. And I told you about that, but you know, I sent you that text. But you know, they asked him a question about with the film. Chris Rock actually asked him the question while he was on the podium. He said, "Would you have made this movie different if you'd been doing Hollywood money?" And he said, "Well, Hollywood don't know nothing about no black people from Red Hook. You know, they wouldn't have had to make no film."
Like, well, you know, again, because you can shoot films so inexpensively now,
right.
it allows you as an artist, even for George Lucas, this film cost, you know, what, 58 to get in the can, as it were, or 53 to get in the can, and, you know, another 35 in marketing. But even still, it looks like it costs a lot more.
Right.
But because of the technology, you know, George Lucas is at one end of the spectrum. Vincent D'Onofrio and Spike Lee are somewhere in the middle. And Ed Burns at the other end of the spectrum. You can still tell compelling stories. You can still make movies. Now, here's the question. How do you get people to see them? What kind of distribution? That is what is transmogrifying. But I want you to listen.
Okay.
And tell me what you think.
Okay.
And you're tuned to the sponsored radio, WBAI 99.5 FM. This is Night Shift. And Chris is on the phone. All right, you're tuned to listen to sponsored radio, WBAI, and I'm speaking with Ed Burns, who's the writer, director, and star of a new movie called Newlyweds. Ed, welcome to BAI. Hey,
thanks for having me.
When did you first know you wanted to be a storyteller?
You know, I wrote as a kid. My dad thought I was a pretty good writer, but, you know, I never really gave any thought to, like, writing as a career until I got to college. I thought, all right, maybe I'll go into either sports journalism, because I was a hoop junkie, or a novelist. And when I was away at school, I started taking some film classes. And it was in one of those film classes where I saw Billy Wilder's film, The Apartment. And I thought, what about writing movies? And then that was up at SUNY Albany. I wrote my first screenplay while I was up there and then transferred down to Hunter College here in Manhattan and started making my short films. And so it was sometime in college when I got the bug.
Okay. And one of the other things that you've been able to do, and I was talking to another friend of mine, a filmmaker, who's an admirer of yours as well, is you've been able to bounce back from doing Hollywood films to doing your own films, sometimes on a micro budget, sometimes with bigger stars.
Yeah.
Now, does that keep it all fresh for you? Like, you know, what's your thinking there?
I mean, as an indie filmmaker, to have the, you know, it's really a blessing to be able to jump and go act in studio movies has been great. I mean, to get the paycheck that you get when you're acting in a studio movie affords me, you know, the ability to go make my own little movies. But more importantly than that, I get to go to school and learn from other filmmakers. You know, I got to work with Steven Spielberg and Private Ryan. That was like going to graduate film school. You know, now Newlyweds is my 10th movie. And like you said, I've made micro-budget film to start my career. I've had some real budgets. And now I've returned to making micro-budgeted films. But, you know, back in 95, it was out of necessity. And now I do it because, you know, it affords me a creative freedom that you don't get the minute someone else is writing you a check. You know, someone writes you a check, you now have a partner, and they feel like they are a collaborator. And, you know, you can imagine, you know, a musician, a songwriter, having to collaborate with the guy who cut the check to go into the studio, or the novelist who has to collaborate with someone, or the painter, you know, like... Filmmakers are really the only group of artists that are forced to listen to the money guys.
And the Dichis.
Yeah. And it's just that I was lucky, I worked with a lot of nice people. I just am more comfortable working with full creative control and creative freedom. And now the technological revolution has given us digital cameras where You know, when you make your low-budget film, it doesn't look like a low-budget film anymore. It looks like you spent a couple of million dollars. And that has changed the game and leveled the playing field. And there are no longer any excuses for any kids out there or even adults who say, like, I want to make a movie. You can now make a movie for a couple of thousand dollars.
Well, you answered probably three questions that went there. But, well, let me ask you this now, and I think you're kind of the perfect person to ask this. I kind of come from the school of believing that a film is directed three times. First time when you write it, you're directing in your head. Second time when you're on set, and the third time when you edit.
Yep.
My question is, A, do you agree with that? And B, what's your favorite stage, and what do you get out of each one?
I absolutely do agree with it. And it's funny, I sort of fell into this new process of making movies by accident. I'll tell you a little bit about that, and I'll answer your question, I think. So when you're making films on these micro budgets, one of the things that you have to do is you have to work around people's schedules, because they're either giving you their time for free, or you're paying them almost no money, or you need access to a location that you're getting for free and they can only give it to you the, you know, the third Saturday in the month. So you can't shoot consecutive days. So what's happened is I'll shoot for 2 days and then I have 3 weeks off. And I'll be in the editing room with those six scenes that I shot. And I'm getting to look at the work and see what's working and what's not working. What are my actors doing that I like? What are they doing that I don't like? What am I doing as a screenwriter that that's working? And is there a subplot that isn't working? So before I shoot the next series of scenes on those next 2 days, I can go back into the screenplay and play some more with it. And I can even go and write out a subplot and put in a brand new one. Now, when you shoot, traditionally, when you think about your screenplay as the blueprint, and that will be the movie, now I've stumbled into this way where the script is less the blueprint. It is more, in a
guidelines.
Guidelines, yeah, it's more like a chunk of clay. And it's like you're continually shaping and massaging, and it's okay to make mistakes because you can go back and reshoot so inexpensively. Or you recognize that the thing, you know, the film you make is never the film you wrote. And now even more, and that sometimes is a problem. But now I think I've learned to sort of embrace that. So I don't even go into production, you know, I used to think the script needs to be perfect. But now I know the script doesn't need to be perfect because my actors and my crew and myself, we want the room to experiment and explore on the set with the thing. And you can't do that when you have someone else's, you know, a couple of million dollars that someone else has put in the bank account and is expecting you to start spending. So then the editing has also changed because it used to be you had the script and you went shoot. And like you said, the editing was the last rewrite. But you're editing the whole time you're shooting, and you're rewriting the whole time you're shooting. So all three of those things are now married into one much longer time period. So the answer to your question is yes.
And then you just like laying in bed, like trying to fall asleep. It's like, you know, let me read a magazine. Let me read my book. It's just nuts.
I can't even tell you the amount of things I do.
Yeah.
This process, which I really kind of think is fascinating now, does it help in this, you know, the Ed Burns process,
right,
that you know the actors you're working with and you know the crew, so you guys have kind of a language and you kind of know what you can get out of them?
Absolutely. You know, I mean, with the exception of Caitlin Fitzgerald, who plays the lead, every other actor in the film I've worked with, and I wrote all their parts specifically for them, but I also, when I had the first draft of the script done, I brought them in and asked them to walk through the script with me to help me sort of flesh the characters out, color them in, add the nuance. And I would say to them, look, I know the whole world and I've created these characters, but you're going to know that character so much more intimately than I ever could because I have so many other things to worry about within this story. So bring to me all the different shades that I just can't anticipate. And that really changed the script. The story stayed the same, but who they were inside of the story
changed subtly, and I think that's why people are seeing the film and saying, it just feels a little bit more real and honest and lifelike.
It does.
And I think that came from my willingness to collaborate with them in that way. And, you know, them, their willingness to sort of jump in and say, oh, okay, like, we're going to be flying without a net sometimes. I'll go for it with you. I think there's a mutual trust that we have of one another. And that's true of the crew. You know, it's, again, we shot some days with just a one-man crew. You know, I was putting the sound recording devices on myself and another actor. And our DP was, you know, we shot with the Canon 5D.
I know, I'm shooting with it now.
So yeah, no, and it's incredible.
It's amazing.
The look.
I'm amazing.
I mean, here's a great story. So the script isn't done, but I'm close to being finished. And we're talking about how we're going to shoot it. What camera are we going to use? We're going to shoot on the Red. And my DP suggests, well, you know, we should explore this Canon 5D. So we get on the subway, we go up to 34th Street, go to B&H, buy the camera right there. Take the train back down to Tribeca. I call up a friend who owns a gym, and my character plays a trainer. And I said, hey, look, do you think we can come by the gym? I want to shoot a test shot to see how this camera works. So we go up there, available light, I wire myself, it's the DP and me. We shoot the scene in the gym, it ends up in the movie.
Wow.
That's how easy it is in this day and age to make your filmmaking dream come true.
And so you just used wireless mics hooked into the camera?
We didn't even use wireless mics, we used these things, it was called like an M-Audio pack. It's something that records on a flash drive
right. With
a lavalier mic. So you just hit record, so nobody's riding any levels. So, you know, we had some sound issues on the film, but not a lot. And then we take the footage, we shoot the scene, take the footage back to the office, dump it into the computer. You know, you're not renting an Avid anymore, you're not renting an editing suite, you know, you've got Final Cut on your laptop. Dump it in, look at the footage and say, okay, we're making a movie. When are we going to shoot again? And it's that simple. And I keep trying to tell people, don't be as precious as you think you need to be. The script doesn't need to be perfect because the script isn't what you're asking people to respond to. You're asking them to respond to a film. So, you know, your actors are going to change the script. The location that you end up getting is going to end up changing the script or the scene. And you should be willing to sort of allow that the creative process to continue through the production, and I should say not the creative process, the writing process to continue throughout the production.
Were you getting into this, Chris?
Totally awesome, dude. Did you pick up a Canon 5D?
No, but my DP has one, and it's pretty amazing. It's pretty amazing.
It sure is.
It's pretty amazing. And so I just want to say now, what I found interesting there is his process of shooting and then being able to look and kind of...
Which actually allows him, I mean, what he is doing essentially, and what's brilliant about it is he gets to do his reshoots is what he's technically doing. In other words, he's going in and he's reshooting if he needs to or not or whatever.
Right. He's writing
right.
with his camera.
Right.
And that's what was beautiful about that to me. Well, we spoke a little bit more. I'll let you hear more. But he also uses some interesting narrative devices within the film to help drive the story along. So overall, it's just such a refreshing, interesting. You know, it's not rocket science. It's not Oscar winning. It was very good, and you really enjoy it, and you really. You enjoy what he got out of
it. He's doing ultimately what like Stanley Kubrick was doing in the long, drawn-out process.
Incredibly expensive.
Well, yeah, but Stanley, because we were shooting with film and stuff like that, but Stanley would keep shooting scenes until some kind of create, you know, until he saw an incredible moment when he looked at what he shot, you know, and then he captured some incredible moments, which is why some of his films are beyond brilliant. But you know, shooting for 2 days, taking 3 weeks off or whatever, there's looking at your footage, you get to go back. It's like one of the processes, the problems that I had with my film was, in order to get all that gear again to shoot so everything would match up, was very expensive. To go back and go, oh, we need like 2 more days to shoot our pickups or fix something.
Well, you see, they're in the process here. He had the opposite problem. Instead of trying to compress it, he had it stretched out. So, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. I'll just let you hear the last thing we talk about, the narrative. But I just want to know if you're enjoying it.
Oh, it's just, I hope everyone else is. I think it's great.
Yeah, you are tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI, 99.5 FM. We're talking with Ed Burns about his new film, Newlyweds, which he shot for $9,000, and it's interesting what he did and what he did with the narrative. And I got a few things out of it, and hopefully you do too.
One of the other devices that you use a little bit in Sidewalk Stories, is a sort of pseudo-narrative where the characters occasionally, as if they're being interviewed,
yeah,
talk about themselves or the situation. It's great.
Yeah.
And it works so well. And nobody's really ever done it like this. So, how did you stumble upon it, and what made you decide to go back to it again?
Well, I did it in Sidewalks, and what we sort of had certain rules about where we thought and when we thought the interviews took place. We thought, all right, they started at the beginning before the cameras rolled. This couple or these folks have agreed to let a documentary crew follow them. And then there would be a series of interviews that took place after sort of the story of the film had finished. And then we thought there would be the spontaneous interviews that might happen right after someone slammed the door and the person left, turned the camera on them and asked some questions. So we thought, all right. So that's how we'll use those as our guidelines as to, you know, what they're going to comment on. The interesting thing with Newlyweds is, you know, Sidewalks of New York is 10 years old. Now with this film, using a pseudo-doc style, we started to question, well, where might these people allow cameras? Will they allow them in the bedroom? Will they allow them sort of on dates with them? And we realized, you know, in the last 10 years, what's happened with reality television, the gloves are off. You know, people allow cameras everywhere they go. So we thought, well, there are no longer any rules as to where we can't go. So we can bring those cameras into any personal situation. That's kind of, those were the rules that we used to kind of govern. Those were the rules of this universe for this film, I guess.
Okay. And I guess my last two questions here is, and I liken this, I once interviewed this painter, this abstract painter who did these giant things and little things in it. And I remember looking around the studio and I said, so how do you know when you're done? He says, oh, a painting's never done until somebody else sees it. So for you, with all this freedom, how do you know when you're done?
It's amazing that you bring up the something being analogous to painting, because this process now of shooting for 2 days, cutting the scenes together, and then having the freedom to sit in your editing room for 3 weeks before you go and shoot again, I keep talking, it's a lot like that painter. You know, he creates his painting and he can sit there for 3 weeks, take his time, look at it and say, you know what, I think it needs a little bit more red or a little bit more of this or a little bit more of that. And then he can spend a couple of days to throw another layer on. And, you know, you can imagine if that process, if there was someone standing over his shoulder saying, hey, we got to make the day.
Right.
When are you going to get this done? We got to move on. It's an insane way to think that, you know, creatively, that's the best way to work. So what we're doing is more maybe the way a painter approaches it. And I guess, you know, like a painter, you just have the discipline to say, all right, we can keep playing, but at a certain point, you got to walk away.
It might be different, but it's not going to be better.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely.
All right. Well, they're giving me the signal, but
all right, cool.
I can easily talk to you for
a while. Awesome. Awesome.
All right.
What are you working on? You got a film?
Crew. one sound to fit this monosonic mosaic. Oh, this works. As an ancient drum pounds deliberately, reminding me of every heart that ever beat and every man. Gourmet. Gourmet. Eyes closed, he's lost, tangled in a collage. His long and slender Italian shoes tapped in timely acknowledgement of what can only be described as groovy bliss. A groovy gourmet. Gourmet. Listening carefully now. Brown eyes gleaming analytically into the distance. A love affair. Man and music. First met, man, there was no silence. I don't think there's been silence ever since. Remember when we spent time with our Aborigine cousins? What did they call it again? A didgeridoo. Didgeridoo. Uh-huh. Gourmet. Oh. Gourmet the fun. Oh. And when we comforted our African brothers from the cry of slavery with a spiritual melody, a change is gonna come. A change's gonna come. A change is gonna come, yeah. We're there. And every celebration ever seen, ever had. Gourmet. Gourmet. Gourmet the funk. Listen, the smell of salted tropical herbs filled the air, enough to make my mouth, eyes, and ears water. Add what you like. And what would you like? Yeah.
Be bold enough to talk over just a piece of music I wrote, Chris.
What are you talking about? You can, you've got the greatest voice, man. What do you? This day
allows you can just. Yeah, I can't get on that beat like. Yeah. Go me the funk.
Thank like you. I was.
Thank you very much.
I was shooting the movie.
Go me the funk. Go me the funk.
She took her top off.
Not sure.
Go me. But I have sunglasses.
It only happens. Here.
Go made a fun.
Gun shift.
I couldn't see because I had my sunglasses.
Go it only happens.
Go made a fun.
Here.
Oh yeah. Hold on. Go made. Go made.
Yeah, I couldn't.
Go made. Go made. Go made a fun. Gourmet of fun. Said I believe. Said I believe. Said I believe. Said come on. Hell, hell, hell. Say hi. Say hi. You know, that song had so much funk that it actually could conjure up a woman.
Yeah, well, you know how it is. She's right on time.
Elena?
Yes.
You were conjured up by the funk.
I am so
She appeared
conjured.
In a mist of
she's
funk.
Right on time. I said she'd be there soon. What do you have?
I wasn't sure. I was loose. She gave me this ring here. I think this is the ring of silence. She's like, she gives me this ring. She's like, don't
Why were you insecure? Don't ever be insecure when it comes to Elena.
I'm always insecure with you, Chris. You know how that goes.
Well, Elena, just so you know, the theme is passion. What are you passionate about? We heard from Ed Burns. He talked about his film. We're going to also hear from Vincent D'Onofrio. Do you know Vincent D'Onofrio?
Mm-hmm.
He made a film. It's called Don't Go Into the Woods. It is a slasher musical.
Oh, that's quite interesting.
Yes, it is. He shot it on his property. Okay. With he'll tell you how he cast it. It's just like, okay. And, you know, the thing, and I say this to him, the thing that makes Vincent D'Onofrio so great to me as an actor is that, you know, the way he does what he does, the choices he makes, no one else would make those choices. It's like Vincent D'Onofrio. Do
yeah.
you like him at all?
Yeah. I do like
him. This is my rifle.
What? What did you say, Chris?
This is my rifle. Anyway, I don't even know what that's from.
Mm-mm.
Full Metal Jacket, Vincent D'Onofrio.
Oh.
This is my rifle.
Anyway. He's great. He's great. He's definitely great. Do you watch him on that show, Elena?
I do. Mm-hmm.
You do? Okay.
He's actually the nicest guy. I've talked to him. I met him on the street, and we talked for like 10 minutes. And I really do believe he's Orson Welles. He could be Orson Welles. And he played Orson Welles in Buffalo 66, as a matter of fact. But I think that. He could do an incredible version of Orson Welles. Like being in Hollywood trying to get like Citizen Kane made and just a different weird version, you know. I think he'd be really good. But I was always very impressed with Citizen Kane.
Right. I don't think anybody can like equal Citizen Kane in my opinion, but
uh-huh.
I think he could definitely step
no,
to the plate.
No, I don't think he would do Citizen
Gotta
Kane.
Tell
I
you,
think
you haven't seen my week with Marilyn. Kenneth Branagh, he's got Orson Welles down.
Now.
He's got. Did you see My Week with Marian?
Not yet. No.
Go see it. Just go see it.
Right.
I never got to see Leif Schreiber do him.
Uh-huh.
You know when he was young and thin in that other movie. Did you?
No, I don't think so.
I know we still have to see Citizen Kane.
I've yet to see Citizen Kane.
No.
Elena made me go out and buy it, right? And
right.
then she doesn't come over.
No, she's Citizen like, oh, Kane. What I was trying to say was that Vincent D'Onofrio could play Orson Welles making Citizen Kane, not a Citizen Kane type movie that would be at the level of Citizen Kane. Citizen Kane can't really be duplicated.
We were really Elena was talking about Citizen Kane. Mm-hmm. We weren't talking about Citizen Kane.
But no, Citizen Kane. Although you guys haven't seen it, you know I don't even know how you can consider yourselves, a filmmaker, Mike, if you haven't seen. Citizen Kane. Okay, so there.
As soon as I see
now,
it,
I snapped. I said it.
I will be.
I agree, Chris. I have seen it.
I mean,
and I've urged
there,
Mike.
There are so
to
many
do
films,
so.
Mike, that you haven't seen. That
true. I'm glad though.
I'm glad, and
I look forward to them
right.
coming out on Blu-ray.
Right.
So I can watch them on my giant TV.
Right. What well, besides the good, the bad, and the ugly is a brilliant.
Yes, I'm from the Bronx here. Hello?
Yeah, it's okay. I go ahead and talk. I won't say anything. We'll just take calls, and I'll just be quiet.
Hello?
Because I'm trying to make a point, and you're taking calls. So make your mind up on what you want to know.
No, Chris, actually, Michael. I have a question for you. I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's just either you're taking calls, say, we're going to take some calls now, and then take a call, and then I'll finish what I'm saying, but not right in the middle of what I'm talking.
No, actually, Chris, can I ask you just one question? I'm
sure,
sorry
go
to
ahead.
Intrude. What movie is...
You have to call him Master.
No, okay. Don't have to call me anything. It's just, you know, Mike, chill out a little bit. Just back up. You're being a little... Being your... normal self. Go ahead.
Oh, what movie I would obviously we've all both have admitted a movie that we haven't seen that we wish we had seen. what movie would you really want to see that you have not seen?
That's a good question. What film? I don't know. I guess something that someone... I guess it would be kind of like some, like when Mike says that a film is really great, then I know I need to see it. So to answer that question, I've pretty much seen anything that I've wanted to see. But if Mike says, like Mike said to me, that Source Code was brilliant. Right, Mike?
It was. Did you
and
see it?
And he said to me, see Source Code, and as soon as I saw it, right after I saw it, I text him, oh my God, you're a god. You know, because
wasn't
right
it great?
On.
It was great. All right, now listen, Chris, you had something you were going to say about that it's a great film. You were mentioning it's a great film. What was it?
I was mentioning The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Good, the Bad, and the Ugly is great because...
It's really great, and I don't know if you've seen it recently, but it is just so good. It is so long, but it doesn't feel long. And that's what I think when a film's really brilliant to me, that, like, you know, Apocalypse Now, or, like, The Director's Cut, or some of these films that... You know, they're like two or three hour films, and I can watch them, and I don't feel like I'm in the middle of watching a film.
Okay, but what about the films that you watch over and over every weekend, like Wrath of Khan?
All right,
I'm going to take some calls because tons of people are calling, and you know, I gave out a theme, and they wanted to talk about it. They heard Ed Burns. They talk about him doing his art and his passion. Hello, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Mike. It's Joe.
Who?
Joe.
Joe, we need a new theme, Joe. I need a new theme.
Well, I'm in a state of stasis. It's written, but I never record it.
You're in a state of stasis.
Stasis.
All right. So what are you passionate about, Joe?
Well, firstly, I want to make a quick comment.
Besides
on Chris.
Night Shift.
Yes. Okay. Chris's comment about DiNozzo.
You make a comment on Chris's
comment?
Okay.
Yeah, the time has passed because Wells was relatively young, vital, and thin when when he was pitching Citizen Kane. And D'Onofrio, as wonderful an actor as he is, can't roll back the clock. But it would have been grand. I agree with him. Okay, in the past, you know.
Well, no, you know, Vincent D'Onofrio, because he's put on weight and everything, he could play Orson Welles now when Orson Welles started going off the deep end.
He could play Orson Welles when Orson Welles started to go to seed.
Yeah, like in other words, after he broke up with Rita Hayworth, he could be when he started doing magic, and he could play the large.
You know, it's Orson so Welles. Funny that you say when he started doing magic. Vincent D'Onofrio talks about that, doing magic. All right, you can hear all that. And so what did you want to say? What are you passionate about?
You had mentioned Stanley Kubrick briefly before. And his favorite filmmaker was Max Ophuls, and his favorite film of all time was Les Plaisirs. Max Ophuls was a German director who came to the United States, made some wonderful films, and then went back to France. But his type of filmmaking, which I can see the influence on Kubrick, it was a lot of use of chiaroscuro, you know, just dark and light.
Did you say a lot of use of chiaroscuro?
Thank you. And one of the most personal film directors that I've ever seen in terms of sometimes very few characters in a film, but deep interpersonal stuff, like he really gets in there and just tears your heart apart. And it's ironic that, you know, you would think maybe that wouldn't be the guy for Kubrick, but that was his favorite guy.
Thank you there, Joe.
Watch for Max Ophuls films. They really hold up in a kind of strange way.
Joe?
Yes.
Thank you.
That's it.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
Joe?
Yes?
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you, Joe.
Joe, thanks.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, Joe. Joe.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
But there's no one like Orson Welles.
Hello, you're in the air.
I'm passionate about vegetable burgers and veggie franks while watching football.
That's very good. I like that.
Watching football. The
whole concept. Hello, you're on the air.
100,000 are coming to see me at the California Speedway. You know why?
Because you have veggie franks.
No, because I'm the world's greatest filmmaker.
Okay.
Well, even... you can now be that.
Chris actually responds to... That's true. You can. Hello, you're on the air.
Rosebud.
See? Told you.
Hello, you're on the air. Hello. It's the tropical birds.
Elena, you have a couple stories there. There are a couple stories that caught my eye, but I do want to know what you're passionate about, Elena, before you tell me anything, before you read anything.
Before I read anything?
What are you passionate about, right, Elena?
Well, you, of course.
No, I mean, seriously, is there anything that you're very passionate about? Like, if you really thought about it, because I warned you, I gave you time.
You did give me time.
To consider, okay?
I'm passionate about, believe it or not, television.
Okay, like today's television, television from the past.
From the past.
And now, I'm going to walk out on that limb with you, Elena.
All right, go ahead.
Passionate in how, give me an example of your passion for, you know, old TV.
Well, when I go home, even though I don't even have a television right now, which is ironic.
She's like a Woody Allen character.
Yeah, so far this is good. This is actually, the film is starting right now. Go ahead. You are in the movie.
Should I videotape her? I have HD.
I'm passionate about TV, even though I don't have a TV. Go ahead, Elena.
Wait, let me get this on film.
I look for it online all the time.
Start from when I go home.
Yeah.
When I go home, I can't wait to change my clothes. And sometimes, actually, when I'm divulging a little too much, but when I go home, I sit and...
She puts on her Lucy outfit and dresses up Fernando as Ricky.
Actually, I have a Lucy doll, and I keep her, and I just watch, and I wait, and I stand in my apartment, in my boots, or my high heels, and my clothes, and I just wait until I'm ready to go, because I have to be in full mental...
Ready to go. Are you speaking in code, Elena? I'm not sure what you mean.
I have to be ready. I have to be prepared.
For what? For the Martian attack? Or I'm not quite sure what you have to be ready for.
No, I have to be mentally, emotionally, and physically prepared.
To watch TV.
To watch TV.
I understand. So you have like a ritual or something that you do?
Yes.
What do you do?
Well, that's the thing. I don't know what to do.
It's too personal?
No. I don't know what to do. I look around and I'm like, how do I best prepare for my television watching?
Elena, is this true? Is this a 50s musical? I look around and is that all there is?
Right.
Is that all there is?
Even though she doesn't have a TV,
she prepares herself to watch it.
Right.
Elena. An original.
But there. I do look it up, and I find...
You go on Hulu?
I do go on Hulu.
So you're a Hulu hunter. Thanks to me. Why thanks to me? Because I told you about Hulu?
You did.
Don't blame me.
And I go on TV then.
Hello, you're on the air.
It's like Land of the... You watch like Land of the
Giants. I'm the world's greatest filmmaker. There's no doubt about that.
No, of course not. Hello, you're on the air. Hello.
Martian Attack was good, man. What a space cadet.
What are you passionate about, sir, besides whatever you are?
I'm passionate about what the heart wants, you know?
The heart wants?
What the heart wants. The mojitas lindas.
Did you say the heart wants mojitos, you said?
Mojitas lindas.
Mojitos with Linda. What does that mean, Chris? Hello, you're on the air. Hello?
Yes.
Mike. Yes.
I hope you're passionate about the Spiral book and take the challenge.
Yes, I'm afraid to open it, George. I did get the Spiral book. I'm just not sure. If I open it, then what will happen? What will happen?
All right, well, I
have it. I found it. I got it. You want me to read? What is it, George? I don't know what it is. What is it?
Hi, George. Why did I get an e-book?
But anyway, look. If it helps me get on this,
What is this book you sent me? I have it.
Well, I've
it's sitting on
so
my
many,
kitchen table.
Well, it's good. It's good. Read it. I've written so many things. I just forget what it's about.
Oh, okay. So you wrote a special
book's worth of stuff for Mike to read.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Did you give him a decipher? Something you decipher, whatever you call those.
Well, anyway,
to decipher
it's,
your code.
Anyway, read it, Mike. Read it.
All right. I'm going to read it.
So it's not a decipher. It would be a cipher.
It would be a decoder book.
Yeah.
That's what you're talking
cipher.
About.
He would give you a cipher.
Back in
no,
the day,
you could decipher the book.
It's not that bad. It's not that bad.
What?
It's not that bad.
George, why didn't you send it to me?
Because Mike's more important.
No, I'm not important. I'm just, behind the
mic.
I
know, but I would be able to decipher.
Hello, you're on the air. Hello?
Hi.
Yes, hello.
How are you doing, sir?
How are you? And what are you passionate about, sir?
About your show.
Good answer.
I would just drive in one time. Hello?
You're going to do what?
I would just drive in a couple of weeks ago, and I listened to your show the first time in my life, and you saw
colors.
I kind of just the best music I've ever heard on radio or anywhere else.
Yeah. You got to say
yes.
That again. We're going to use this as a card.
Yes.
And I just want that city. You were giving it away, but I was driving. I couldn't get it. I've been waiting to call in.
Okay. And now, do you have an email?
Yes.
All right, I'm going to give you the email address. You can email and you tell me what show you're talking about. And if you're talking about the Martin Luther King, I don't know what you're talking about. But whatever it is.
No, it was Mize. You were playing some really, really hot jams. I've never had music like that.
Yeah, that's probably DJM.
Alien. That was DJM. That's what it was. Yeah. It was DJM.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you can get all the DGM, man. We'll hook
that's
you
right.
up.
We'll hook it up. See, what I do is all the music that I play, when the time comes in a marathon comes in 2 weeks, I offer CDs free with a donation to the station, and you can get all the music I was playing over the last, 2 months. Elena, are you seeing the little people? I see Elena's interacting with something
I'm
that's...
I'm seeing little people.
That something's that's not there.
When you were driving, do you drive a cab, sir?
Yes, sir.
You drive a cab because Mike could use a lift home, if you're going to be around down by Wall Street at 2 o'clock. You know what I'm saying?
What time?
Around 2 o'clock down there. Well, Mike will hook you up. Then you guys can talk about the music and all the way home.
Oh, thank you.
No, I'm serious. It sounds like I'm making fun, but I'm not. I'm like, Mike always...
No, seriously, I'll come over. I'll give you a ride whenever I bring you.
There it is, Mike. You see, I hooked you up once
thank
again.
You, Chris.
Yeehaw.
Elena is packing always. She's the bodyguard.
You come down to it's 120 Wall Street, and the show's over at 2 a.m. That's 45 minutes, so somewhere right around 2, and then just pull up in front and just be waiting, Mike. You'll see, Mike.
Thank you, Chris. And then
what?
It was never heard from again.
They will be gone.
No, man, this is guys. I know this cat,
and,
man. He's
and
cool.
In memoriam, we will play one of his DGMs. Hello, you're on the air. Hello, hello.
Yes. That was about science fiction.
No, it was and not. It was not. Nothing.
No, it was like. It was,
no, it was not.
Science.
All right. Hello. Hello, you're in the air. Hello.
Yeah, I've been listening. It took the police 6 hours to get to a call tonight.
Yes.
The
police to get to six. The fact that he's making. Hello. Hello, you're on the yes.
Can I turn my radio on?
Yes, you should, probably.
I'll say I'm passionate about sex and food.
Sex and food. Elena has a story about dung beetles that may thrill you.
Yeah.
Elena, could you give us the dung beetle story? This is just read the headline. You've got it there.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the roach that I saw at lunch today.
No.
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 Good grief.
Elena, what show did you watch?
You know what?
What?
I wonder if you remember. Remember when you came up with that idea about having some type of soap on food? I mean, say fruit. You know, they came out with that idea.
Wait, some kind of what on what?
Remember, you would say that it was a while back. When you go into the grocery store, how people tested fruits. And
stuff.
You know, they came out with
they got the products out. Damn it! Look, see.
Wait. No, tell me
profit.
The product.
Profit or crackpot.
Tell me the product again. What is it?
That cleans the fruit.
The fruit cleaner. Yes, I remember making that joke about 10 years ago. Fruit cleaner, yes. And now they have it. Yes, they have
it. You know what it is? What? You ever see the little label on the fruit, the turkey fruit? You know where it came from, That's the object that cleans the fruit. You mix it with water, you know, whatever.
You mix it in water.
And you just wipe the fruit off with a, you know, a napkin or a handkerchief, whatever.
Yeah, because Mike likes to clean his fruit, you know, his bananas. He likes to wash those bananas. All the time. You know,
as a matter of fact, Elena will come over.
No, I won't.
Elena will come over and clean any bananas clean, I have.
Clean the fruit.
Elena will come over and clean the fruit.
It depends on how big the banana is.
Yeah, Elena
stop,
comes over
be
and
nice.
Clean
stop.
The
don't go,
hey, Elena,
don't go
seriously,
into
though,
the
so you get on Hulu or whatever show you watch old TV shows, right?
Yes, sir.
What do you watch? Do you watch, like, Land of the Giants and stuff like that?
Now, that's before her time, Chris. You're old.
Yeah.
What do you watch? What shows do you watch?
She watches, like, shows
I love
from
Lucy
the 80s
and
in the 50s.
Those kind of things.
Have a good night. On the topic, okay?
All right,
have
thank
a good
you,
night.
Sir. Hello, you're in the air. Hello, you're in the air. Hello, you're in the air.
100,000 crammed the California Speedway.
Whoops. He was consumed by feedback.
Uh-oh.
All right, can you read the dung beetle story a little bit?
Do I really have to read this?
Yes, it's very interesting. Read the headline at least.
Dung beetles dance on poo for celestial navigation.
Now, read the author of the story.
Charles Cho.
Choi.
Choi. Live Science.
From Live Science, it's our own Night Shift's own Charles Choi.
Wow.
You have met Charles Choi. Charles
yes.
Choi, that's right. He's one of our rotating co-hosts.
That's great.
Go ahead, Elena.
Dung beetles dance on top of balls of poo to help to navigate away from rivals as fast as possible. Dung beetles roll up. Ooh, good grief.
Dancing on balls of poo.
Yeah, that's awesome, Mike. I just throw it at people. I don't, like T.G. Allen, I don't.
They roll up dancing on balls of dung to feed their young. Strangely, they routinely dancing climb on top of these balls and dance around in circles on
balls
them.
Of poo.
Yeah. You can dance around on mud.
Dancing.
What?
I've actually heard this. My research interest lies in understanding how animals with small brains dancing and therefore relatively limited processing power are capable of orienting and navigating through the world. To find out why these beetles apparently dance jigs, the researchers experimented with the
dancing
the dung roll
on balls
during it during the dung beetle. They were placed in bins filled with soil where they could make and roll balls of fresh cow dung. We are very fortunate that the dung beetles are such a wonderful animals to work with, even when we place them in the most unusual experimental situations.
Even when we place them on imperfect balls.
These wonderful animals just continue to behave as normal.
I love it when they dance on the ball.
They dance.
Dung beetles typically roll away from dung piles in straight lines.
Poo.
A remarkable feat, given that they face backwards, with their heads pointing
dancing
towards the ground.
Backwards.
These straight lines help ensure they get away as quickly as possible from other beetles that rather than make their own ball would prefer to steal those of others.
They steal poo balls?
They steal poo balls.
Beetles, dung beetles steal poo balls.
It's a poo ball eat world.
Dung beetles, yes. Chris,
you know about that show called Alcatraz?
I've heard about it. It started on Monday, didn't it?
It started last Monday.
It's ghosts on Alcatraz.
No, I've watched three episodes. And, you know, you always made fun of me that I was so fascinated with Alcatraz, and I wanted you to go to Alcatraz. And we went down.
And you're saying you could have created the show, we could be rich?
You know, I'm just saying that, you know, I knew that there was a thing there. There was a thing there. Yeah.
Could you be more vague? You just missed it.
You were like, nope.
I'm sorry.
An evil place, and now the show.
And now it's a show on HBO. Hello, you're on the air. Yes.
Dung beetles there.
Dung beetles are dancing. Hello.
Dancing with your poo.
Hello, you're on the air. All right, what's the phone number here, Elena?
212-209-2900.
Hello, you're on the air.
Greetings.
Greetings, yes, you sound human.
Hello, Chris. Memphis Bell. I'm just curious, are you guys going to do the Ustream again?
Yeah, you know, actually, we're going to do Ustream next week. Next week, Ustream. We're going to have, quite probably, there's a documentary on Occupy Wall Street, and the people who have made it and the people who are in it are going to be here. We're going to have a live debate, and we're going to have it Ustreaming and broaden our audience.
Very good.
Yes. But yes, we will be streaming. You want to see Elena tonight? I could go on Ustream and bring Elena in. I could.
As long as you come and pick me up.
Elena, well, she'll have to take off the scarf, though.
I'll have to bring you over, yeah. So... sounds good.
Okay. And now tell me, what are you passionate about, sir?
I'm passionate about art.
Okay. And yeah, and how does that manifest? What do you do that... give me an example of your passion for art.
Interesting. I don't know. I just like creating things, you know? I'm kind of... I guess many years ago, I resigned that I'd given my life to art, so... that's kind of how it is.
And what's your medium? What do you like to use the most?
Whatever can get the idea across. That being said, I haven't actively produced anything lately, so that may attest to something. In any case,
that's okay, sir. I mean, I totally agree. I love creating. Anything in any sort
you love
of medium,
creating anything.
But sometimes I just hit a wall and I cannot do it anymore.
Have you tried dancing on poo?
Sometimes you just like to just clean fruit if that's what it takes, right? No,
I won't do the fruit.
Please, that as a fruit clean. What does it even mean?
Very fine.
I can barely buy milk, but otherwise. Sorry.
Really, you can barely buy milk. Why?
She can barely buy
it's
milk.
It's so heavy, and look at the
and look at the price. Hello, you're
and,
in the
and
air.
Look at the what?
Price.
Look at the bruise on my arm.
Well, why don't you just get a goat if you don't want to buy milk? Just use that. Have a goat.
I think goats are good. Hello, you're in the air.
I'm trying to think of the next fantastic spiral story I could send you.
Okay.
Well,
yeah.
As soon as you think of it, call right back. Hello, you're on the air.
Start writing it now, you know, George.
Okay.
Could you
give out the phone
right now? Night shift is
212-209-2900.
Just start writing your ideas down in the book and send it to us. Cause
the phone's ringing. And because what, Chris? You could have a night shift notebook? Is that what you're saying?
Well, maybe he has a night. Maybe he could start a night shift notebook and he can write all his ideas, his creative ideas down in one place.
Okay, that's good. I like that. Hello, you on the air?
Hello.
Yes.
Hey,
yes.
What's up?
What's up?
This is Frank.
Frank, what's
hey,
going
Frank.
On?
Hey, Frank. Oh, my
so,
favorite.
Frank, I want to know, what are you passionate about?
I am passionate about your show.
Why?
Because I'm on it.
Because Elena's on it.
And
the music.
Were you grooving on the music? Was it not like anything you'd ever heard?
No, I've never heard this music before.
Oh, that's right. DGM.
Where can I get it?
You can get it at the next marathon.
I knew you were going to say that.
Frank got it last time.
I'm passionate about great... Oh, another thing I'm passionate about. Food.
Food?
Mm. So great. Is Elena. She can...
Elena can cook?
She can clean your fruit.
Yeah.
I can clean your banana.
Elena can come clean the fruit.
Stop, Elena. Don't keep focusing on bananas.
Elena's favorite fruit is avocado.
Oh, me too.
Because it's got that big pit in the center.
I don't understand what that means.
Elena, what do you like your avocados with? What do you eat it with?
Stop believing anything Chris says, all right? All right, you know,
yeah,
first
Chris,
of all, let Elena speak for herself.
Frank, Elena likes avocado.
Chris
things.
Is just, you know.
You know I don't like anything
people,
green.
One of those people that they call up.
But Frank, honestly, to go on with the subject matter, like, what are you passionate about aside from us? And food. I mean, and then what food, if that's really what you really are into.
Yeah, I am passionate, though, about great food. You know, like...
Great, did you say gray food?
Great.
Okay.
Like, you know,
great
really food, good food.
Yeah. I like gray food.
Like, compared to why
like
I grew
in
up eating.
Soylent Green.
The food that I ate was great, but, you know, like, so I'm trying something different.
Right.
It's really good.
Yeah, you ever have avocados?
Avocados, I grew up on.
Yeah, see... What they do is they take the pit from the center of an avocado, right? And sometimes...
They hit them upside the head.
No, they don't hit them upside the head. But
passionate
no, they,
about
they
the
when... pit from avocados.
All right, Chris, you know, you just stay over there, okay? And I'll come back to you. Hello, you're on the air. Hello, you're on the air.
Passionate.
Yes, hello.
Yeah, hello.
Yes?
Yes.
Sir, what are you passionate about, sir?
Fruit cleaners.
Fruit what? Fruit cleaners.
Fruit cleaners.
He's passionate about fruit cleaners. Thank
How
you.
How did
sir.
We get on fruit?
You know, there it is.
The guy
That's
remembered that Mike said
news
like,
at 11.
Years ago,
How did we get on fruit?
We need more fruit cleaners
That's
in the
right.
world. Sure enough.
That's right. She's a freelance fruit cleaner.
And there was a fruit cleaner there and Mike got the kid.
All right, here we go.
Hello, I don't even clean my own apartment.
Hello,
I'm not going to clean
air.
Fruit.
Hello, you're the air. I like that, Elena. Fame
is... Earth to Elena. Earth to Elena. You're fading.
I'm fading. I'm fading.
Hello, you're the air.
Oh,
hello,
no.
You're the air. That's pretty good, actually.
Yeah.
Yes,
I kinda
who is
like
this?
That.
Hello, you're on the air. Who is this?
You want Passion Bottle?
What's your name, sir?
Did
you say Passion Bottle?
No, we know what I'm passionate about.
Oh, yeah. What are you passionate? Is this buckwheat?
No, man.
I know you got a new identity for...
Elena, how you doing, Elena, sweetie?
2012.
How you doing?
Wait, he ain't buckwheat anymore?
He's not buckwheat anymore.
You like that? How you
He's
doing?
Wheat buck.
Keep saying that.
Wheat buck.
How you doing?
He likes buckwheat, though,
he's,
man.
No, he's
you don't
wheat buck.
Be buck.
I love
Call
buckwheat.
Him wheat buck. Wheat buck.
I'm passionate about big, nice, juicy, nice, juicy...
Elena's.
With booty, you know what I'm saying?
A nice juicy Elena's with booty.
No, chick is what I'm saying.
Oh, chick. Well, Elena's a chick. She got juicy booty.
I'm talking about in your face.
All right, so that's what you're passionate about. You're in your face. What does that mean? In your face.
Is he,
like you're a midget.
Is it your birthday? Because
and
otherwise
she's tall
we wouldn't
in
let
your face.
You talk like this.
What, my birthday?
Yeah, he's... Single. This is called single.
Have you seen any trailers lately?
This is the purview
I
of
no,
the single
no.
man.
Well, I'm talking about the nice little way you sleep your head on. The pillow. I'm talking about pillow.
Dang.
What's that?
Are you talking really quiet so nobody hears you?
No, he's talking about wearing polo.
No. I'm talking about a nice big booty that you sleep your head on.
You like a woman you can sleep your head on her. I'm with you. And you're passionate about that, aren't you? Aren't you? Thank you.
Yeah.
Hello, you're on the air.
He-he-ya.
Oh, my God. Hello, you're on the air.
Really quiet, so nobody could hear him in the room.
Hello, you're on the air.
He's very subtle and pretty.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes. What are you passionate about?
Passionate about learning new stuff. So I love the AI.
Okay, mm-hmm. That's pretty good. That's a better answer than, you know. Last couple we had in the last 5-10 minutes.
Last couple of
creepy
people that are passionate about being weird.
And how often have you ever heard this show before? Or are you just a BAI listener?
Oh, yeah. I was going to say Earth Talk, but that's Wednesday night.
Earth Talk,
like,
but this is Space Talk.
This is space, yeah. But you guys, that Ed Burns interview was great. Like,
you enjoyed that.
He took that painter analogy and really developed it.
Yes, he did. Awesome. Yes, he did. Well, I'm going to play the Vincent D'Onofrio in, like, 2 minutes,
yeah.
Because it's really interesting as well. But, so what are you passionate about, sir?
It just made me think of my friend. I'm passionate about my friends. I have a buddy of mine who, he has this thing about Vincent D'Onofrio on Law and Order.
Oh.
And D'Onofrio, I think sometimes, like, he makes awesome choices, but then he's also, it's almost like he is in a different, like, working from a different script than everybody else. I don't mean that necessarily.
Listen, I understand,
like, he's
the
like the old guy.
Yes. That was like sort of like Michael Caine in Miss Congeniality too.
Are you
he was in a different movie.
Right.
Yes, but there
people?
Wasn't really a script in Miss Congeniality.
No, there was. Shatner was in there. Shatner was brilliant.
Oh, but, Lord.
Yeah, no, I'm with you, sir.
I agree with you 100%. I think that
D'Onofrio walks to the beat of his own drum.
I think you can show up completely in from another movie. And you're playing.
Did you ever see, you know what, the classic example of that? Did you ever see, there's an episode of The $6 Million Man, okay?
Uh-huh.
Now, keep in mind, Lee Majors is an under actor, you know what I mean?
Right.
He does, everything's like, yeah, sure, pal. Well, Oscar, I don't understand, Oscar. You know, that's Lee Majors, very low-key.
Uh-huh.
William Shatner was guest star on an episode, and when they were together, you'd cut from one to the other, it seemed like they were in a different movie. He's like, Steve! The dolphins! I can. He's talking to me in my head. And Steve's like, well, I don't hear him, Bill. I don't know what you mean. And it's like they seem like they're in different movies.
That's great.
It's true. I'll play it for you sometime. Anyway, yes, sir. Am I touching?
Christopher Walken has that kind of quality.
Oh, definitely. He's totally otherworldly. Totally. All right. Well, I'm gonna play this Vincent D'Onofrio. But Elena, you had something. Do you want to read one of your headlines to me? Just one headline. Just one.
Just one.
Tasty headline.
Palestinian woman says locked and stays locked. Oh, I've read about this.
Okay.
She stayed locked in her bed, in her bathroom for 10 years by her father.
That is in some intenseness.
Wow.
That's some intenseness. Life is like science fiction. It's not another planet we're talking about. It's Earth.
That's why I was kind of forced to know so confident.
Is that her now talking to the bathroom?
That was her, yeah. She speaks in tongues.
No. And I did read about this. And she said that, I mean, to surmise, she said that she wished her father to have the same fate.
Mm. Lock his ass in the mail. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello.
Yes, hello. A woman.
Yes, indeed. I am a woman.
You are a woman.
Stop
hear,
it.
Here you roar.
And
right,
I love
so.
To dress like one and put jewelry on and all of those things.
And what are you passionate about?
I am passionate about
Mike.
Jazz. Jazz and the spiritual
jazz?
Connection.
Did you say jazz and the spiritual connection of jazz?
Yes. People like Woody Shaw, Freddie Hubbard, Joe Henderson.
The transcendent ones.
Pardon?
The transcendent ones.
The transcendent ones. Yes. In fact, I was lucky to study under Joe Henderson's auspices and played with a lot of these other people. And I just want to let you know that this is... Tonight, I was listening to an album with Woody Shaw, and it transported me to some of the highest heights. I used to take drugs. They had nothing on what music did to me. And I think people should get into the... I know I sound funny right now, but I'm sorry. But I think that people should understand the cultural, very deepness of this music, the artistic quality of our American classical music, starting from Louis Armstrong and coming up through people like Woody and even, I'm trying to think of a trumpeter I can't think of right now.
Miles Davis.
But I love you, and God bless you, and that's what I have to say.
Oh, thank
that's
you
cool,
so
Miles
much.
Davis.
Sweet.
Thank you, baby.
Cool.
And I'm speaking with actor, writer, producer, director, Vincent D'Onofrio. Vincent, welcome to BAI.
Thank you. Good to be here.
When did you first know you wanted to be a storyteller?
When I was a kid. I mean, I had a huge imagination. And I used to make up stuff all the time. Yeah. Things that I did during the day and stuff. My mom even told me when I was a kid, I made up the story about these woods across the street from our house and that I found some kind of tiger there, and I told her this whole elaborate story. I have a son, Luca, a three-year-old, who's very similar to that. He makes up stories, tells these elaborate stories at dinner that have nothing to do with anything that actually happened that day. And he just goes on. He never breaks. He always goes as if it's real.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
And so now then the next question is, when did you first know that you could act? Was there a moment?
Well, I didn't know that I could act for a long time. I knew that I was comfortable on stage because I used to do magic when I was very young. And I used to do big shows and stuff in Florida. And with other magicians, not just me, but like a group of magicians would go on. And there would be huge audiences. And I would do all these performances with all these Cuban magicians. And a couple of them took me under their wings and taught me stuff. And I knew that I was comfortable. I never had butterflies ever. When I went on stage. But my dad was involved in community theater in wherever we lived, and I was a techie running sound and light, so I got to see a lot of stage stuff. And then, you know, I started to go to acting school just on a whim. And I studied for a long time, and I got very comfortable doing it. And there was a certain style of acting that I liked, which is more in-depth kind of studying, and it was a combination of like classic and method acting, and I just started to get jobs, and that kind of tells you right away that you can do it as good as anyone else.
Sure, yeah. Sure. This piece, and I read a little bit. I read the press notes, like what inspired you to want to do this, and to me, what always made you great as an actor is that you would do something nobody else would do. So I can't think of too many other people that would say, let me make a slasher musical on my...
Yeah, it's just another absurd decision, I don't know why I do the things I do. I just think of them, and I just get this itch to do it. And, I made this short a few years ago called 5 Minutes Mr. Wells, and I just had an itch to do that, so I did it. And this was the same thing. It's an absurd idea. I was talking to my wife. I was bored, and I said, we have a house in the woods upstate, and I have a friend who's a singer-songwriter, and a friend that's a professor at NYU who's a screenwriter, and I swear to you, I just came out like this, why don't I make a slasher musical with non-actors? And she said, okay. and I pitched it to my friends a couple of days later, and 2 months later we were shooting it. And so the idea was to write a B-horror film structure, script, and put pop music on it and shoot it in as little time as possible for as little money. So we shot it. We ended up shooting it in 12 days. Mm-hmm. And after post, it cost about $100,000. To cast it, there was no casting director. There were some girls that worked at the coffee shop around the corner from my house on the east side and lower east side. And I cast two of the waitresses and the art director out of there. My nephew's friends had a band called the Dirty Dirty, and that was Matt Speglia, Nick Thorpe, and Suman the drummer. Sam Bisbee, who is a singer-songwriter, brought in the other two guys, Casey and Jorgen, and a couple of extras from Criminal Intent, Kira and Cassandra, who are in the movie. Cassandra's the lead girl in it, and the last one that's left on the rocks at the end. And, the trick was we did a couple of read-throughs, and I sort of gave them some lessons on how to not act, where there's, I wanted no performance. I wanted all their deliveries to be flat. And because most of them had no experience on film, like every one of them but two, I knew that they could all sing incredibly well, and play instruments incredibly well. But I didn't want any performances. So I would read the lyrics, not their lines, but some of the lyrics of the songs during before we would start to read throughs. I would introduce the read throughs like that before they started to read themselves.
Mm.
And I would say, that's the tone. If you do more than that, you're acting, I don't want it. And then what happens is they naturally, if they start at that really low level, they never really go much above that. They do go above it. And they do add little tinges of performance, but nothing spectacular. And so, and I think in this day and age, when there's a different style of acting out there than there was when I was a kid. I mean, my generation of actors, the ones that I think are really great, technically great actors, they're so good at their technique. Like, I don't know, like Meryl Streep, for instance. She's so good at her technique. You know it's Meryl. You know she's acting, but she takes you. She takes you with her. This is a completely different style. This is this kind of a mix between television acting and like 70s television acting and like slacker, like early Linklater, Kevin Smith films where they were. It's like a mix. There's a new kind of way of acting out there that's, I don't know what it is. I don't know how you do it, but I know that it's the delivery is very flat. And I don't want to say it's bad acting because that gives it like a negative thing, because I really enjoy watching it. Like, it's different than what I do for a living, and I find it thoroughly entertaining. And I wanted this Don't Go in the Woods, which is a totally absurd idea, to have this kind of flat tone contrasting with this big production pop music stuff going on. That was a long-winded answer, right?
No, it was a great answer, actually, and you answered about three other questions I was going to ask you. So, but what the effect is, and I guess you're still performing magic now, the effect is that because the acting is at a certain level, it gives more strength to the songs, because the songs start to create more context. We learn their inner life.
And right, a little bit. You learn their psyche a little bit. The other thing is that it's a trick, really. As you know, you can do tricks in film. It creates a tone that's not something you haven't necessarily felt before. And it's always teetering on being really flat and just horrible or just interesting enough to keep your attention. You know, it's the kind of film that I enjoy seeing where I don't know if I love it or hate it. You know, it's like, is this bothering me because of its execution, or is it bothering me because it's a bad story, or am I just getting used to it? It's like an album, you know, where you have to listen to it a couple of times, and then you're totally infatuated with it.
Because you see how it all comes together by the
end.
Yeah,
yeah.
Sure.
And so, it's like that, you know. I approach it the same way I have my acting, you know, which I guess is what you were alluding to in the first part of the conversation, which is, there's two things. There's two results. People are either going to hate it or they're going to love it. So you might as well commit 100%. Who cares? You know what I mean? It's like, I commit to a role and I just do it the way I think it's right, and I totally commit to my way of execution. And I know there's going to be one of two outcomes. So I approach this the same way.
What do you think, Chris?
I we should just get all these guys together and just hang out for like years, because it's just, these guys are just brilliant. I mean, it's just, he's so right on. I know. And you snapped. You said you think you're doing magic right now.
I said what? What did I say?
You said you know you're doing magic right now.
Yeah, he said.
You didn't catch it. I caught it.
No, you didn't catch it.
I
but,
got it.
So it was interesting, though.
It's great. It's
interesting.
Great. It's
interesting.
Great. You know, I think what this is all alluding to in a weird way gets back to the original theme. You were saying that, you know, and you know, you've interviewed Francis Ford Coppola, and so have I. And you know, Francis said that, you know, eventually, you know, he used this analogy that some fat girl in Iowa is going to make a movie with, you know, with a couple of cameras, and it's going to be a brilliant film. I mean, he's didn't really, I don't think he meant what he, when he said that, a fat girl, so to speak. But,
well, he,
but
he's just saying he, that, he's, you know, exactly right. He's exactly right in that, that, you know, part of it is here, and this is what I this is what brought it in as the theme of the show. You know, George Lucas is on one end of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. This is a passion project, and he's got $93 million of his own money that he could put into something. Right. Ed Burns, on the other hand, you know, has $9,000 he was willing to put into his passion.
Right.
Vincent D'Onofrio had $100,000.
Right.
Spike Lee's new film, Red Hook, right, is probably somewhere between $1 and $1.5 million. You know, I don't know the budget, but again, and maybe it's half that. But
Red State is on money.
Exactly. Kevin Smith has done it. So what's happening now is that artists, and that's what filmmakers are, the storytellers of our time, are adapting to the economics. You don't have to be a Kubrick where you take forever and you do shoots and shoots and it costs millions and millions of dollars. Kubrick would thrive now.
Right.
So
I would call it. You know what? You know who they're really, they're all doing. They don't even realize it. They're all doing what Woody Allen is doing.
Well, again, not only what Woody Allen is doing, because Woody Allen speaks from where he comes from, but what they're doing is they're doing their art in their way,
right?
And they are changing the face of cinema without trying to. They're not trying to, they're not charging. And here's what it reminds me of. It reminds me of art school. In art school, what was interesting to me, when you study art history, you learn about the abstract expressionists. And to me, what stood out to me at the teenager at the time I was learning this was that here are these artists who are doing this art, but then they're writing books that sort of justify it being art. And so they're sort of rewriting the rules, what, you know, subjective versus objective, of what art is and where is a form of expression. And as we've watched computers come into the graphic department, we've watched video be able to supplant film in terms of a viable way to make a film that could be absorbed and consumed by a general audience, you know. And we've watched, you know, records give way to CDs, which gave way to MP3s, which were lower sound quality. So we've just watched that the way we receive information and entertainment is changing and always ongoingly changing, and artists adapt to that. And it's, that's part of what's interesting, is because whatever your passion is, whether you're George Lucas and your passion, you can spend $93 million, or you're Vincent D'Onofrio and you can go off on your house in the woods with your friend who's a, you know, a musician, and the waitress at the that gave you coffee, you know.
I gotta say, interesting point. You know, when I cast some people in my film, I cast them because they were the characters without them acting. Okay? And then when they showed up, they started acting. And I had to, like, it was madness. But I'm just saying that, you know, I found a slick way is that if you just find a couple of people that are the characters without them acting, all you have to do is just, all they have to do is read the lines because they are the characters.
Well, they both talk about that. Both Ed Burns and Vincent D'Onofrio talk about that. And what's interesting, you know, I'll mention something that I didn't play the interview, but I had wondered, Aaron Magruder, who is the creator of Boondocks, is listed as one of the screenwriters on Red Tails. And I'm like, you know, A, how did he get called in for that?
Right.
And B, why? Like, what was the thinking? And so I interviewed him, and I'll probably play it at a later show. And he said that they brought him in to add some humor to the film, to add, to break it up a little bit. And Lucas has said clearly that he would like to do a prequel and a sequel. And, you know, he kind of shot more than this and did the reshoots on his own, you know, a la Spielberg on Poltergeist or whatever. And so it's an interesting thing that this is a time where artists can create with new tools.
Yeah, you're going to see an explosion of things.
The fat girl from Iowa.
Yeah, you know, you're gonna see
Elena might get to make her film. You know how I? You want to know something? You know how Elena and I got to be on the show? You want to know?
I don't even know.
Yeah, Elaine doesn't even know.
No one knows.
No one knows. Shut up, Chris.
Like, I always defend
it's,
you.
It's like why they call it the Forbidden Zone.
No,
you know?
Because she decided that she was going to clean your fruit. And she's been doing it ever since.
She's a fruit.
Sounds so bad.
That's so bad.
Mike goes to music.
I did go to music. Just to
go ahead. You were going to say.
Elaine's honor. Now you interrupted me. It's okay. Fine.
No.
Do it. Hello, you're on the air.
Hey, I am hung up.
Hello, you're on the air. This is George. Hello, you're on the air.
Hey, I wanted to talk about my big passion right now.
What's your
now.
Big passion, babe?
And how big is it?
My girlfriend, Lorna. It's a shout-out to my girlfriend, Lorna.
Is she listening?
Yeah. Oh, no, she's not. But I'll send her the podcast tomorrow.
Send you the podcast tomorrow. Yeah. Laura. What's her name?
Lorna.
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 Lorna. This is for you, Lorna.
She makes me a better man.
Does she know you got that from Jack Nicholson?
I plagiarized my mom. I plagiarized movie stars.
Hey, listen, plagiarizing,
it's, like folk art.
It's a way of art. It's a way of living.
Yeah,
there's nothing.
You plagiarize lines from movies, you can live your whole life. It just
I didn't even know I was quoting Jack there, but yeah, it makes sense.
Right. He tasks me.
Chris only quotes from Star Trek, though.
And I would.
So what are we going to say, sir?
Looking forward to the Wall Street show next week.
The Wall Street show, you're down.
I'll get into that.
What that crap is all about. Talk about
critical
the stuff that they don't.
I think that's
please,
the phrase that pays,
please,
right?
Please.
It is the ultimate terms of endearment.
You know, the overall view of the Occupy movement. It is changing things on some heavy levels. And people are afraid of the movement, and that.
Well, I'm going to confront them from
and
the
that's
perspective
the word.
Of night shift. Hello, you're on the air.
Yeah, did he say he had a 3-year-old kid?
Chris has 3 3-year-olds, and he had them all simultaneously. It all happened. It all happened in the same night.
No,
D'Onofrio. I'm not. Yes, he did.
He said he had a 3-year-old that just.
Yes, a 3-year-old. Yes,
I love to see that. You know,
what
I played with very really gifted 3-year-olds in some magical age.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, let's see. I wish I could film that.
Elena, do you have any pictures of yourself?
I wish you could film that.
He wants to film Vincent D'Onofrio's 3-year-old. Hello, you're on there. It's a little stalky there.
No, I think I look 3 years old now.
I don't understand.
It's a little stalky. Hey, who's
this? You know what? First time I called, I was fooling around. I'm telling you about booties and like that. This is buckwheat anyway. I know.
Buckwheat.
Buckwheat. Oh.
Wheat buck.
Okay, you know, I'm really passionate about, you know, music. You know, I like music. All kind of music from the world, like that.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, some you can't find, like, in the store like that, but imports.
Right.
You mean like what we play on Night Shift here?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Are you passionate about fruit, man?
Fruit?
Yeah.
You like fruit?
I like fruit, man, yeah.
He's like, I like fruit, but I like it clean.
Elaine, do you want to be my banana?
No, Elaine is over there. She is sampling her own fruit at the moment.
I would take care of your banana,
she's
but that's
sampling
it.
Her
thank
own
you,
fruit.
Thank you. Yeah.
Like free sex favors, free. Like some people say, free hugs. Ladies say, free sexual favors.
I'm not adventurous eater, but I'll eat. You know.
I know you. Hello, you're on the air.
That's okay. You're sweet. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, ladies, well, lady, you're sweet like a slightly rotten banana. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Professor Osterizer out in California.
Professor who?
Hello.
Osterizer?
That's
Osterizer.
Yeah, last time I was Professor Cuisinart.
All right, so what are you passionate about, Professor?
Oh, that's what I want to talk about. But by the way, Vincent D'Onofrio, he was great in Household Saints.
Who?
And also in Adventures in Babysitting as Thor.
Who was great?
D'Onofrio.
D'Onofrio, yes.
He was in only one scene at the end of... Adventures in Babysitting, but it's the most memorable scene in the movie. It's really a great character.
All right, hurry up because we've got
Black,
like a minute.
Too.
We got a minute left.
Men in Black.
Yes.
Oh, you got to go off the air. WBAI.
Yeah, but you
got to.
You're in New York.
No, we're still.
What do you want to say, sir?
So, Yeah, I'm passionate about, of course, women and food and all that good stuff. But especially as it relates to your show about science fiction. There's so much great science fiction and fantasy out these days.
Yes,
with Jacqueline Carey's Crucial series, David Brin's Uplift series, Julian May's books. There's just so much great. There's so much great science fiction and fantasy.
That is true.
It's really rich. It's really rich. You know, I get really frustrated with my friends when they talk about science fiction, and they're always inevitably they're talking about movies as if there's not even such a thing as a science fiction book.
Right on.
And that's where science fiction really lives.
Or, I mean, that's where it began. Listen, before there were movies, there were books. Jules Verne couldn't think about getting adapted. So there it is. I agree with you, sir. Thank you for calling. What's your name?
Professor Osterizer.
Professor Osterizer.
Go up to the Hollywood Sign.
Now, you can like us on Facebook at Life is Like Science Fiction. I'm sorry, at Night Shift, NITESHIFT. NITESHIFT on Facebook, or you can go to our website, which is lifeislikesciencefiction.com. That's all one word, lifeislikesciencefiction.com. Or you can email us and ask about anything, music, Galena, her fruit, at lifeislikesciencefiction@gmail.com.
Post me some fruit.
So please, like us on Facebook.
Post fruit.
Post fruit.
Very clean.
Yeah, Elena is cleaning up her act for the 21st century.
Yes. No more negative words. No more cussing.
Just like to have a good polish on the avocado.
Okay. I will definitely try the avocado. And I've tried the Crisco.
Elena, don't respond to these people.
I really do. I bought some Crisco yesterday.
Now, where do I bring this up, Tony? Where is this going to come up? What's coming up next? Where?
Crisco is... Bring it
up. Yeah, Jimmy Dore is coming up for everybody.